Next week sees us starting a series of lessons on the book of 1 Peter. So I thought that it might be useful today just to have a look at Peter, who he was, a kind of Simon Peter, this is your life. And as I started to look through episodes in Peter's life, I get stuck in this one story, the one that we read from Matthew chapter 14. The setting's this: Jesus and his disciples have been looking for some peace and quiet, so they get in the boat, they have a wee sail, they go across the lake, and lo and behold, the crowd get wind of what's up. And so they race round the lake and meet Jesus at the other side. And so instead of a bit of rest and relaxation, he's faced with the crowd, and he spends all day teaching the crowd and healing and ultimately feeding the crowd. And that's where we pick up the story. And Matthew says, immediately, it was only yesterday, I think, that I noticed that word immediately. It appears three times in the few verses that we read. Jesus' actions are immediate. Now, my wife will tell you that my philosophy in life is don't do today what I can put off tomorrow. Jesus is a man of action, and his actions are immediate. And we find this again and again, not only in this story, but in other episodes in the Bible. Immediately, Jesus dismissed the crowd, he dismissed the disciples, and he goes up the mountain just for a bit of rest, a bit of sleep, just for a bit of exercise, walking up the mountain, maybe to play games on his tablet or whatever. But no, Jesus went up the mountain so that he would have time with God. This was important to him. Again and again in the Gospels, we find Jesus going away, separating himself so he can spend time with God. His time in prayer with his Father was a priority as far as he was concerned. He was a busy man. He'd spent all day with this crowd. But yet he's got time for God. What gives when we are busy or tired? The last few weeks have been particularly busy for me with all the housework and all the rest of it I have to do. No, it has been a busy few weeks, and I've been involved in lots of important things. Things to do with church, things to do with worship. I haven't had time to waste, and I'm looking to save time somewhere. Well, prayer is something that I can do later. Surely won't matter if I miss out just this once. I'll offer God a few minutes if I've got the time. But I don't want prayer to interrupt the important things in my life, the good things that I do, the worthwhile things. I'll pray when I can. Isn't that so often the case? That when things are going well, when things are calm, we forget about God, we ignore God. And it's only in the storms that we turn to God and we cry out to him. Paul encourages us to pray without ceasing. To pray without ceasing. If the creator of the universe, if the word of God felt it important to spend time in prayer, and not just a few minutes, but long into the night, how much more important is it that we spend time with our creator? And Jesus prays to God up in the mountain. And as he looks down, he can see what's going on. The disciples can't see him, but he can see them. And he can see the storm that's brewing. He can see the troubles that they're faced with. And the fact of the matter is that God looks down from heaven. Jesus looks down from heaven. He sees us, although we can't see him. He sees us. He knows the problems we face. He knows the difficult waters we find ourselves in, the challenges. He sees, and just as he did with the disciples, he comes down, he meets us where we are. And so Jesus comes down, and the disciples see this apparition walking in the water. They thought they were seeing a ghost. Natural for them. This was a cultural myth that sailors who drowned, would walk the seas. What they were looking at was something that was completely beyond their experience. Never before had they seen someone walking in water, and so they tried to make sense of it by saying, "It's a ghost." They couldn't believe that they were seeing Jesus. Isn't that the sort of thing that we do? We try to reason things. We try to explain things. It's what some theologians of a certain persuasion will try and do. They'll explain things away. Jesus didn't actually walk in the water. You see, it was quite dark, and there was a storm and the spray and the mist, and they saw this character who was walking along the beach, and it looked as though he was walking in the water. Jesus didn't actually feed 5,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fishes. A young lad brought his packed lunch, and Jesus broke it in front of the crowd. And when the crowd saw that this boy was sharing what they had, well, they took out their packed lunches and they shared it with other people. God didn't part the Red Sea. It was a tidal effect. The tide was very low, and the children of Israel walked through. And just at the moment that the Egyptians were going through, the tide came in and drowned them all. Lazarus was in a coma. He was in a deep sleep when they put him into that cave, into that tomb. And when Jesus rolled the stone away, he was actually awake, and that was why he was able to walk out. We're clever people, and we try to explain things, and we don't understand what we're talking about. We've got an idea, something that does make sense. It might be something that we find comforting, but it's not helpful. It's not accurate. God's ways are not our ways. His mind is not our mind. We don't know why things happen. We don't understand why God should let certain things happen. My sister, I think, was 12 years old when she went in her first guide camp. And my parents were anxiously awaiting news of how she was getting on. Now, we didn't have a phone. No money, lots of class, no money. And, you know, a few days into the week, a postcard arrived from Morag. And this is what it said, and I quote, "An emergency has arisen. Please send 2 and 6 pence. That was it. Don't know what the emergency was. I think she'd spent all her pocket money within the first couple of days. But it reminded me of a story I've heard from a Methodist preacher, Sangster, W.E. Sangster, told this story about receiving a similar message. It was even more succinct than that. The message was simply this: SOS, LSD, ASAP. And he was asked, "What does it mean?" And Sangster replied, "I don't know, but I'll ask him when I see him. And I don't know why there are floods and illness, cancer, earthquakes. There's lots that I don't understand, but I'll ask him when I see him." God moves in mysterious ways, his wonders to perform. The fact of the matter is that the disciples didn't recognize Jesus in this storm. And too often we don't recognize Jesus in storms because we aren't looking for him. So Jesus comes to them and immediately, there's that word again, immediately says, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." I much prefer the translation in other versions of the Bible, including the Amplified Bible. "But instantly he spoke to them, saying, 'Take courage, I am. Stop being afraid.'" So between the two commands, "Take courage, stop being afraid," is that expression, "I am." I am the special name of God, the name that God gave to Moses. Moses in the wilderness, and God's speaking to Moses and saying, "I want you to go back to Pharaoh." And Moses is looking for excuses. And eventually asks God, "Who will I say sent me?" And God says, I am, I am. And Jesus used that expression numerous times in his ministry. I'm the bread of life, I'm the good shepherd, I'm the way, the truth, and the life, and so on. Jesus is identifying himself in this episode with the great I am. The disciples were terrified. They were scared. They were scared because of this apparition. They were scared because of the weather, the storm around them. But Jesus is identifying himself to them. He's telling them who he is. He's assuring them that he is right there with them. And surely they remember a previous episode where there was a storm, where they were in fear of their lives. But Jesus was there, and Jesus calmed the storm. He did it before. Surely he'd do it again. And when we go through challenges, difficult times, we need to remember that he is the great I am, that he's helped us in the past. He'll do it again. The promise of God throughout the Bible, repeated in the Old and New Testaments, is this: I will never leave you or forsake you. And then at last we come to Peter, doubting Peter. If it's you, Peter wasn't sure, he couldn't believe that it was God. And so he asks for a sign. Isn't that typical? Just like us. Willie Black 2 weeks ago, remember talking about his call to the ministry in Kinloch Bervie, the back of beyond, and he was reluctant to go, and God sent a sign and another sign and another sign. How stupid are we that we need all of these signs? Gideon. So Gideon's been commanded by God to do something, and Gideon says, not sure. I really need to know whether this is you that's speaking or not. I need a sign. So listen, this is what I want you to do, God. I'll put a fleece on the ground, and in the morning when I wake up, I want the dew to be on the fleece. I want it to be wet, but the ground all around it to be dry. And so when Gideon woke up, sure enough, the fleece is soaking wet and the ground's completely dry. That's a sign. Maybe I got it wrong. Let's try it again, God. This time, I want the fleece to be dry and the ground to be wet. And of course, that's what happened. And we look for signs. Faith, says the writer to the Hebrews, is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And our faith is in Jesus, whom we haven't seen, but to make experience through the Bible and through our lives. And Jesus commands, come, he says to Peter, come. Now, that couldn't have made any sense to Peter. Never before had he or anyone seen someone walking on water. But for Samuel 15, to obey is better than sacrifice. And so Peter obeys. When Jesus commands, we must respond. Peter responded. Jesus didn't actually calm the storm. Not at that point, no. He invited Peter into the storm. And we will often find ourselves in difficult situations. Peace isn't found in the absence of the storm. Peace is found in the presence of Jesus. Not in the absence of the storm, but in the presence of Jesus. And Peter stepped out. He got out of the boat. He'd gone from being a doubter to having faith. None of the other disciples were prepared to do it, but he did it. He stepped out into the unknown. He didn't know what was going to happen to him. He was used to being inside the boat, where he was in control, but now he was out of his comfort zone. He found himself in a place that wasn't very safe, but he was willing to take the risk. And with Jesus, We need to be willing to take the risk. We need to be willing to chance it, to do something that we didn't think we could. We need to be willing to walk in the wild side. We need to trust in him. October 1984, it's a date that's implanted in my brain. One afternoon, Catherine and I had two friends in, and she had made some cakes and are sitting in the coffee table and we're having a cup of tea. And our daughter Rebecca was 8 months old and she was holding on to a chair for dear life. And she saw the cakes and she took four steps across the floor to the cakes. Now that might not seem significant to you, but to us, our jaw dropped because we'd never seen her walk before. This was her taking her first steps. Now, it wasn't as though it was the kind of steps that a model would take going down a catwalk. They were kind of shaky, but she got there. And from that day on, she would take steps. Sometimes she'd fall, she'd be wobbling around. But you know, the thing is that the more she did it, the easier it became. She's 39 now, and she can actually walk from the front to the back of the church. And when we step out of the boat, these first steps are difficult, they're shaky. There are times when we'll stumble and fall. But you know what? The more often we do it, the easier it becomes. And things were going swimmingly, if I can use that expression, and then it all goes wrong. Understand that if you're learning to walk a tightrope, one of the secrets of success is to look ahead. Look to where you're going. And this was Peter's big mistake. He took his eyes off Jesus, and the storm quickly overcame him. What was it that changed about Jesus? Nothing. Jesus, the same yesterday, today, forever. Nothing changed about Jesus. It was Peter who had changed. Instead of looking ahead, he's looking around. He's looking down. He's seeing the wind and the waves and thinking, jings, this is an awful lot more powerful than me. And he'd forgotten that Jesus is more powerful than the wind and the waves. He looked at his surroundings. He looked down. Instead of walking by faith, he's now sinking by fear. What are the fears that cause you to sink? What are the fears that you're holding on to? The old hymn that we used to sing, what a friend we have in Jesus. Whatever they are, take it to the Lord in prayer. As we were saying earlier, Jesus is the answer. We find the answer in him. What are the things that distract us from Jesus? Things that, in their own right, there's nothing wrong with them. But we get distracted by shopping or housework or television or golf or family, church, presbytery plan. And we concentrate on these things and we forget about Jesus. Jesus, we need to fix our eyes on him. And that's what Peter failed to do. To misquote, Peter and we can be too earthly minded that we're no heavenly use. Lord, save me, Peter cries out. Peter is sinking, gripped by fear, but now he's gripped by Jesus. Peter, Jesus said, had little faith, but he had some faith. He had enough to know that he needed a saviour. He'd enough to cry out to Jesus. He'd enough to know that Jesus is the only one who could save him. And it's the same with us today. We start on this exciting, wonderful journey that we call the Christian life by crying out to Jesus, Lord, save me. And Jesus' response is immediate. Immediately, Jesus reached out. Immediately, when we cry out to him, he reaches out to us. And now, they get back into the boat, and another miracle happens. The sea is calmed. And another miracle. More than that, Peter and the disciples now recognize who Jesus is. They saw the power of Jesus at work, and they say, this is the Son of God. And for the first time in their experience, the first time, they fall down and worship Jesus. O you of little faith. This incident involving Peter changed him from a man of little faith to a man of great faith. Well, not entirely, because Peter would fail Jesus again and fail him again and fail him again. There's a verse in Matthew chapter 26, verse 58, and it speaks about Peter. By this time, Jesus is arrested, and Peter is in the courtyard, and he's facing another storm because people are going to question him about who he is, and he loses courage. And Matthew 26, verse 58 says, Peter followed at a distance. Peter followed at a distance. And what really bothers me about that verse is that that's my verse too. It's the story of my life. Because all too often, I want to follow Jesus, but I want to follow at a distance. I want to follow him on my terms. I want to do it my way. And so, I don't speak out when I should. I don't rebuke someone for using the Lord's name in vain. I wouldn't tell a questionable story, but I'm quite happy to listen in when someone else does. I can share all I have with anyone, as long as their lifestyle and their opinions agree with mine. I'll lend a hand if I've got nothing better to do. But the thing is, Jesus forgave Peter again and again. And he trusted Peter. He gave Peter responsibilities. He gave Peter a job to do for him. And what Jesus has done for Peter, he'll do for you, and he'll do for me. Shall we stand and sing once again? Focus my eyes on you, O Lord. Focus my eyes on you. Turn round my life to you, O Lord. Fill up my heart with praise. Focus my eyes on you.